Christ, according to St. Matthew. Six days after Peter said that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzlingly white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord.
Good morning. It's good to be here among friends. As George already mentioned, every year, the last Sunday in Epiphany is designated as World Mission Sunday in the Episcopal Church. It's a time when the Church comes together to focus on the global impact of our baptismal promise, to seek and serve Christ in all peoples, to strive for justice and peace, and respect the dignity of all people. It is in this context that George has generously ceded the pulpit to me, and it's a great honor and pleasure to be here with all of you. In my estimation, when we make an analysis of our record as in mission in the Episcopal Church, we as Episcopalians have good reason to be proud of our mission legacy as of late. The Church has proven to be a welcoming place in society without discrimination. The Church has also taken the lead on a number of social issues and boldly endeavored to work globally to eradicate poverty and confront injustice. Nevertheless, I find that there's something curious about the way we talk and to some extent go about doing mission in the Church. For those of you who have participated in a strategic planning process at some point or another, you may understand what I'm getting at. When an organization defines their mission, they painstakingly craft a statement about precisely about what they do, and that statement orients all their strategic decisions and actions. A successful mission statement is one that you never need to read, but is understood through the consistency in which an organization executes its mission. In other words, we shall be known by our actions. So for clarity's sake, let's try some examples. Starbucks makes strong coffee. Apple makes hip computers. Harley-Davidson makes motorcycles for people who like to wear black leather. So what I find to be curious or concerning about the way that the Church defines its mission is that we tend to relegate mission to something, and specifically world mission, to something that we do on the side. To deal with mission, parishes will often create small mission committees, or parishioners will drop a few quarters in a box every week. Perhaps a parish will decide to do an occasional mission trip to another country or a poorer part of your own country. So in effect, what mission is or becomes is a sort of extracurricular activity, more than a fundamental purpose of a Christian church. The mission of the church is what we do in the world. This was the topic of the talk I led yesterday with the Diocesan Group on World Partnership. My talk was titled, "Public Theology, the Voice of the Church for Justice." Theology being the study of God, public theology deals with the implications of our knowledge of God in public life. It is the study and practice of what we know about God and what that requires us to do in the world. As an example of public theology, I describe the role of the faith in building a vision of universal human rights. People of faith throughout history have looked around at the world they live in and saw oppression, injustice, and violations perpetrated against fellow men. For people of faith, these violations constituted blasphemy against a deeply held religious conviction that all men and women, having been created in the image of God, are equal in dignity and rights. Yesterday, I pointed out one famous public theologian named Thomas Jefferson, who famously wrote in the Declaration of Independence that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Jefferson does not appeal to political philosophy or science, but to theology as the foundation of fundamental human equality. Among El Salvador's many famous public theologians was Oscar Romero, the martyred archbishop. Romero preached that in mission, each one of us needs to be fired up with a passion for justice, for human rights, for liberation, for equality, but impassioned by the light of faith. It's not enough to be philanthropic, he said. What we as followers of Jesus are looking for is to call everyone to sisterly and brotherly justice and love. In today's gospel reading, we are awed by the transfiguration of Jesus, a powerful moment on the mountain in which God confirms the authority of his beloved Son, with whom he is well pleased. But there is no need to build a dwelling, he says. The church and the followers of Jesus must, as soon as next week's gospel, will need to follow Jesus down from the mountain into mission in the world. Foundation Cristosal was founded nearly 15 years ago with the charge to be a vehicle for mission in El Salvador. Cristosal emerged as the country itself emerged from a traumatizing and terrible civil war. Our founding mission was to bring the good news of peace, reconciliation, and justice to the people of El Salvador. Our public theology is manifest today in human rights work in El Salvador, where our organization is divided into three programs: the Office of Human Rights, the Community Development Program, and the School for Global Engagement. The purpose of the Human Rights Program, the Human Rights Office, I should say, is to contribute to the building of a culture of respect for human rights in El Salvador and to provide a resource for the poor to access justice that so often eludes them. The office imparts human rights training to government institutions like the police and the Ministry of Immigration, as well as in communities across the country. Jose Lopez, who is our program director, offers pro bono legal advising to the poor, which recently has provided a unique window into a largely invisible and growing problem in Central America. Thousands are being displaced from their homes as a result of gang and narco violence across the region. Our office alone received nearly 150,000 people seeking refuge outside El Salvador last year. This year, we are developing a specialized program to attend to these Salvadorans who suffer internal displacement as a result of violence or serious threats of violence against their lives. One very memorable case we had last year involved a family who came to our office in San Salvador. They were fleeing members of the National Police Force who were using the family's 11-year-old daughter as a drug mule. Driven by fear, the family sought to escape the country, but without guidance and legal advising, they didn't know where or how to begin this risky process. The primary focus of the human rights program going forward will be to offer assistance to cases like these by helping victims to relocate to safety and document their cases and make them more visible for the purposes of advocating for greater protection of human life for Central American victims of violent crime. When this program is in place in the coming months, it will be the only program of its kind in El Salvador. And it's worth mentioning St. Edmund's role in building the Human Rights Office. Years ago, St. Edmund's made a 5-year commitment to fund the Human Rights Office, and today you have great reason to be proud. Our community development program, on the other hand, implements a rights-based approach to development that seeks to honor the dignity and equality of the poor by engaging them as citizens and not beneficiaries in the construction of development solutions in their own communities. This approach focuses on building the capacities of the poor to exercise their rights to be and to do as equals in their society. 2 weeks ago, the community development program celebrated a hard-fought victory in a rural community called El Carmen. After nearly 2 decades without a passable road, the Ministry of Public Works finished the first phase in the construction of a new road. The community has long pointed to the intransitable conditions of their access road as a principal barrier to their community's development. The improvement of the road will allow and is allowing for greater access to healthcare, schools, and markets. At the last minute before the construction began, Crystal South staff and community leaders were even able to negotiate the extension of the road to access agricultural lands and the community's water source. The impact of the open access will no doubt fuel the growth of 2 agricultural business initiatives and a community water company that community leaders have built together with Crystal South staff. This project is the result of a long process facilitated by Crystal South's professional team. We provided the community members with trainings to learn about the municipal codes and the rights that they had as citizens. We provided trainings to learn more about citizen participation. We provided assistance in helping the community to organize and build an advocacy campaign. And we also worked hard to build a political network to lobby the government to make a public investment in El Carmen. The road could no doubt have been built with a donation, but that wouldn't have solved the underlying problem. The underlying problem that the people have suffered through all the years since their founding is exclusion from public investment, abandonment of the people by the part of their government because they were poor and small. This road project, the construction that was just completed 2 weeks ago, was the first public work project in 20 years. In this specific community. But the achievement of the construction itself is secondary to the structural change that occurred, the structural change in the community's own expectations as citizens and their ability to advocate for their rights and negotiate with their government. Our third program is called the School for Global Engagement, or just the Global School. The program is an integral part of our historic mission to serve as a bridge between Salvadorans and North Americans. The Global School offers week-long field courses for North Americans in El Salvador. We receive church groups, university groups, and groups from seminaries across the country and in Canada to engage in Salvadorans in study and dialogue on issues related to human rights, development, and mission. The purpose is to build global partnerships grounded on human rights values and shared understandings about the world that we share. This year, we are offering unique courses on topics including LGBT rights and the theology of development. The Global School also facilitates internships for college students and open forums in San Salvador to promote academic exchanges and service learning opportunities. The Diocese of Los Angeles will be participating in a course this summer with the Global School that will be called International Development and Mission for Episcopalians 101. You are all obviously welcome to come, and I encourage you to do so. I think we have more information in the back, and you can grab George after the service. This is an exciting time for Crystal South. We've been working hard to strengthen our organizations, and we're beginning to see so many of the results on the ground now. On this World Mission Sunday, I want to thank the St. Edmunds community for being our partner in mission. I am personally grateful to the leadership and financial support offered by the St. Edmunds community over the years. Specifically, I want to thank George, our vice president, my boss, the one who got me into this mess, and also Gail Rolfe, who is one of our newest board members and is chairing our strategic visioning committee that will be providing the leadership to plan our future growth. I also want to thank Brian and Sherry Tyler, who are my hosts and always dedicated friends of Crystal South. And I also want to thank all of you, including the members of St. Edmund's Local and Global Partnership Committee. You, as a congregation, have provided us with much energy and support so that we can grow and have a good impact in El Salvador. You should know that Crystal South is a product of St. Edmund's commitment to mission and I hope that our shared work can continue to be an outward and visible sign of the parish's mission and work in the world.
En el nombre del Padre, el Hijo y el Espíritu Santo. Amén.